Listen to us online, on your phone, download a podcast, or on your tablet. Radio Gorgeous, there for you. Hello and welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Miss Donna Freed.
Thank you very much, Josephine Pembroke.
Lovely. So today we're talking about a subject which is taboo.
And yet, none of us get out of here alive.
The subject is death. So it's Death Week on Radio Gorgeous, and I want to talk about, have you heard such thing? You know, it's now fashionable to have a good death.
Yes, a good death. Like it used to be a good war.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, yes. A good death.
Yes, yes. Or a good illness, I suppose.
Yes.
But what we're talking about is they've just released results last week that one in two of us are now going to die of cancer.
Oh, right.
And actually, I read this article by this man who was an oncologist, and he said, actually, dying of cancer, he said, I know it's awful, but the good news is you can say goodbye to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can do the big deathbed scene, you know, like out of an American film. But you can lie in bed. You can. I had a close friend that died of cancer this year, and she wrote 50 letters to people she loved.
That's
to be
beautiful.
Sent, you
That's
know, when
beautiful.
She died. And I thought that was really nice. And everyone in her family were all around her. And her daughters, who maybe she wasn't as close with before, they all really bonded. She managed to tell everyone she loved them. So, I mean, that is quite beautiful, isn't it?
Mm.
So I think maybe that's a good death.
Or, you know, as people call pneumonia, old people's friend.
Yes, yes.
Carries you over.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everyone just wants to go in their sleep, don't they?
No, I don't. I want to go with the big bed and say goodbye to everybody. Going to my sleep would be a real... I'd miss it. I don't want anybody miss my death. Christ, I want to be awake.
It's the last moment that it's all about me.
Exactly. And I want to say my last words and everything. But then,
what do you want your last words to be?
I love you all.
Rice crackers.
No, you all love me, don't you?
Say you love
yeah,
me.
Yeah, say you love me, yeah. Anyway, the other thing I want to talk about is euthanasia, because you have strong opinions about that, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when the time comes, heaven forfend, when the time comes for your darling kissy moo to go, and she's in pain, although now we hear her panting, she's just fine, don't panic anyone. You wouldn't do it to a dog if she were in pain, if she were...
What to a dog?
You wouldn't keep a dog alive beyond... You know, we do put animals down.
So what are you trying to say? Let's put humans down.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure whether it's a good thing, Donna, because people... But, you know, there could be someone out there that is trying to get rid of someone in their family. And
you're worried, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm worried that someone's going to put... They're all going to sign me off.
Send her to Amsterdam.
Exactly.
Have her put under.
Or Switzerland. I mean, why do you think this is a good idea? I mean, anyone could go. There was a young guy who got... He went to the clinic. He was only 20. He'd become crippled due to a rugby accident. And everyone said that was terrible because he might have just been depressed.
Yeah, I do think, you know, safeguards have to be put in place. This is why I'm a big proponent of a living will, you know, because if you're not in a position to say, and you haven't, you know,
can
put...
Can you explain what a living will
is? A living will, you outline the conditions upon which you would like the plug pulled. You know, if you're a vegetable,
okay,
if you
can
can't
you tell
feed
me
yourself.
Now, just in case.
Later that day.
I'm going to pull your plug immediately. Is that okay?
Yeah, exactly. Oop, her eyes are closed. Pull the plug. Yeah, see, this is why my husband has it and not you.
Yeah.
But, you know, because otherwise.
Would you like to be a vegetable?
I really like artichokes. What would life as an artichoke
No, I don't
be
mean
like?
That. I mean, would but you no. like everyone again no. to sit around mourning you and people play tapes and sing songs to you and everything trying to get you back?
Yeah, for like a month, then give
a
up.
A month, okay. So 30 days on the 31st day. Or the
plug.
Okay, all right.
Okay. But, well, I mean, you don't think that there were any circumstances under which you would want to be able to...
No, I want to hang around, darling. I can't miss the party. I mean, and I love the idea of people just coming to visit me, even when I'm a vegetable.
Just to inconvenience everyone.
Exactly. And I want them to feel mournful, depressed, and bitter and resentment towards me. At least it's an emotion.
RadioGorgeous.com.
Okay, now let's talk about our ideal funeral, because obviously I plan mine. What about yours?
Well, the thing is, I do...
How do you want to go? Do you want to be buried? Do you want to go...
Cremated. Cremated.
Well, how do you say it?
Cremated.
Oh, we say cremated.
I'm going to be cremated. Okay. Okay, like it's going to be very creamy and lovely. But I forgot I wanted to be cremated. And, you know, my father was touting around the family. He had these two burial plots and in the middle of nowhere in Long Island. And of course, being New Yorker, I'm obsessed with real estate. And I was like, oh, well, let me think about it. But I realized, oh, you can't build over them and you can't sell them.
So is he going to be buried then?
Well, I asked, well, why don't you? And, you know, my mother was alive at the time. I said, well, why don't you guys want them? And my mother said, I'm not going back to New York. And my father said, the traffic's terrible.
I was like, I love it.
Really?
So they're both going to be, was your mum cremated?
She was
cremated.
She was cremated. Okay. Yes. And she's waiting in the closet for my father.
Yeah, where is she? Is she in a portal?
Yeah, she wants it, and they want their ashes mingled together.
And then who's going to, then what's the deal? Are you going to throw them somewhere?
In where they live.
Okay, so you're going to be cremated, and it's going to be, I suppose you might, where will you be? In England, in America? Do you want the body flown somewhere?
I don't know. We put my uncle in the Seine. That was quite good. Mm. I don't know. I don't think I'll care. I'll be dead. That's the point. Mm-hmm. I don't really care.
See, I was badly burned when I was 11 years old on my leg, and I really am. I hate fire, and it really hurts. Mm. So even when I'm dead, I do not want to be burned.
So no funeral pyre?
No, even though they are quite glamorous funeral pyres. No, I'd like a natural coffin, going to be buried, covered in fur, real fur, and sort of pink. Because, you know, fur and pink are my favourite colours. Pink flowers everywhere. I'd also like Hey Big Spender to be played at my funeral because it's my kind of song. And obviously I want people, a lot of crying.
Excellent.
A lot, yeah.
So you're going to provide wailing. Onions? Yeah. Onions? You want keening? Okay, and so after I'm done with that big performance that I put on, what are you serving for the party afterwards?
Kir Royales, pink champagne, and lobsters, and...
All right, can we hurry up?
Yeah, exactly. With a cabaret performance by a gay man dressed as me.
Okay, you get points for the best funeral ever.
Okay, so who's the guest today?
Guest today is Elizabeth Scarborough, who, back on the subject of a good death, said goodbye to her boyfriend in a very beautiful way. Elizabeth Scarborough, welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
This week, the cheery subject of death.
Okay.
Comes to us all.
Yes, sure does.
And you have more experience in that as a young woman than I would say most people in our situation. It's a little bit of a taboo subject.
Yeah, that's right. People are very scared to talk about it. And very scared to live through someone's dying, too, I think.
But when you were 17, you met Stephen. So tell us about Stephen and...
Well, we met in high school, and I think I was the kind of girl who thought I would never get married and settle down, and which is always the wrong thing to, you know, make promises about at 17, but I was pretty sure about that. And I met Stephen, and we just had a really strong connection. I fell in love with him. He's very funny, and we were very good friends as well. But I think we both thought, oh, we're way too young to be with someone. So we went off to college and went off to different colleges and, you know, several states away. About halfway through college, I think we both sort of had to admit that we were still in love with each other. And after college, I moved out to be with him in San Francisco. And he had an illness. He had cystic fibrosis.
What is cystic fibrosis?
So cystic fibrosis is a genetic condition, and it's very rare. It's in the United States, there's about 10,000 people with it. But you're born with, you lack an enzyme that transfers salt between your cells, and so you build up mucus in your lungs and your digestive system. What happens is that your lungs over time just are so prone to infection that they just become really, really weak. He was very healthy, actually, for someone with CF. you would have, if you meet him, you wouldn't know. He, you know, he hiked and biked and played football and soccer, and but he did know he had the condition, and he knew that his life would probably be short. And I knew that as well.
And how did that, you know, because a lot of people at that age, you know, you're around 20, and you think, well, either you don't really believe it, you know, that any of you are going to die. I mean, that's sort of at the height of your immortality fantasy, or, you know, or you just run a mile, you know.
I think we did feel very invincible. And also, you know, at 17, 40 sounds really, really old.
Yeah.
It isn't so old to me anymore.
Yeah.
But so I think even, you know, though he knew that was on the horizon and I did too, I never imagined we'd be together even a few years. You know, that wasn't sort of my plan for my life. But I think it also did factor in another interesting way, which is that it kind of called my bluff about what I wanted, because I had to admit that, you know, if I did want to be with him, I needed to go ahead and do it. He wasn't going to just be around waiting for me. So I kind of had to rearrange my thoughts on what I cared about.
Yes, because we do have this idea of like, oh, you know, we're young, we have all the time in the world, and it is an illusion. But it, I suppose it did give you the idea that you would take what you could get with each other.
Yes, and it does make you really value time. You know, you really realize, I don't actually know how much time I'm going to have with anybody. And that was a sort of a strange thing to experience at a young age.
Yes.
You know, and hard, but also in a certain sense invigorating, because it does make you really kind of be less passive about your life in a certain way, just to think, okay, this is all I've got, I'm going to go for it.
Over 2,000 followers can't be wrong. Follow us on Twitter, radio_gorgeous. Thanks, darlings. Mwah.
Were your parents worried about you being with him?
They were really there to support me, you know, not only when Stephen was sick all along, but also when he died. And of course, you know, my life was in upheaval and my whole family really took care of me during that time.
Yeah, because it doesn't get any better. It's never any better, even if you know it's coming.
No, that's right.
It really,
you're not ready.
Exactly. There's never a good time, you know.
No.
And yet you describe his death as a good death.
Yes, you know, I do feel like there were things about it that were, well, many things about it that were good. The most important thing is that he did get to be with his family and me and his friends. And that was always really important to him. You know, a huge part of his life were his, he always said the most important thing in life is the people that you love. Mm-hmm. And we were all there with him. And I also think, you know, it's easier in a certain sense when you know it's coming, just because you have mentally and emotionally prepared in terms of, we talked a lot about, you know, what he would want and just the fact that it was going to happen. And I think he felt like he had a good life. And it sounds kind of crazy because he was only 29, you know, and now I think, oh my gosh, that was so short. But during the time he was here, he lived very, very fully in anticipation, I think. So I think he was not a person who felt like, oh my gosh, there's all these other things I have to do.
Yeah, did it put, I mean, because I can imagine it would put sort of like sometimes odd pressure on things. You know, it's like, I don't feel like having sex tonight. Well, I might be dead tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh God, pulling the dead card again, you know.
Yeah. It's not super relaxed. You know, he was very good about not pulling that card with me. You know, we always tried to have a relationship like we were going to have a relationship for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
If there was a problem, we worked on it because we weren't thinking, oh, you know, it's just going to be over, so we don't have to work on this.
I'll just let it lie. I'll let it slide until you're dead.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think other people sometimes were critical of that. You know, they think, well, why are you being hard on him? Just, you know, relax. Like, who knows how long he's going to be here? And that really wasn't my attitude, and I also knew he wouldn't want that either.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
No one wants to be treated that way.
Yeah, you don't get a pass. Just, you know, because we're all going to die. And you were a widow at 29. I mean, you must have felt like so much, you know, just alienated from your peers.
It was very strange. Yeah, I definitely. I mean, I always felt like Stephen and I were kind of living a double life.
Yeah,
because we were very much in our 20s, and when a lot of times when he wasn't in the hospital, he, or at least, you know, in his early 20s, felt good. So we were, you know, running around on the beach and hiking and doing all these things, and then it would be like, okay, we got to go, because he has to go to the hospital for IV antibiotics, you know. So it was very strange. And not only that, but, you know, in maybe a smaller way, but it felt big at the time. We were also married in our generation. And, you know, I don't know how it is in England so much, but here, when I was 24, most of my friends, none of my friends were married, actually.
I would say I didn't even meet my husband until I was 29.
Right, exactly. And that's kind of how it is here, too. So, I mean, you know, my friends were moving from boyfriend to boyfriend to boyfriend, and I was getting married.
Yeah.
And
to your high school
sweetheart.
So that was
also huge. Yeah, I mean, being a widow was so strange to have already had this whole marriage and this relationship when a lot of people were just meeting someone that they were going to be with. And in that way, you know, I did relate to people who are much older, but in a certain sense, it was really people my grandmother's age.
Yeah.
Because even, you know, luckily most people in their 40s and even 50s haven't experienced that. The interesting thing too was that in a way, you know, all these strangers then end up emerging that you end up having connections with.
Mm.
You know, like I remember my car insurance agent, we ended up in this long conversation because my policy was expired and I hadn't dealt with it. And Stephen was always the one who did all that stuff. And so I spaced it out, which was terrible.
But I have to interrupt you because that is just hysterical. Because, like, even knowing that, you know, he was the one who was going to die, and, like, I should really, you know how to deal with this stuff, still, he was the one who dealt with it. I think that every widow has said that for all of time.
And that's no one, you never realize all the things the other person's doing.
Yeah.
You know, you notice the things that they're not doing.
Yes, exactly. Well, tell me, because was one of the things you discussed, you know, because everyone discusses this, I imagine, you know, but with more or less the certainty that you, you know, statistically speaking, you were likely to outlive him, and statistically speaking, for quite some time, and you'd still be in childbearing years and et cetera. Did you discuss, you know, what you would do? Did he sort of have hopes and dreams for you after he went, or...
You know, it's really interesting. I mean, he always, I think he really wanted me to marry again, even though, of course, the idea of being with someone else would be upsetting while he was alive.
Yeah.
But he really wanted me to be happy afterwards, and happy meant to him being with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
He was just, you know, happy being with somebody. And so he wanted that for me. He was much more cognizant and thinking a lot about the fact that I'd have this whole future without him around. And every so often, these little things he was doing in that regard would come out. Like, it was really important for him that we stayed close to a lot of our friends.
Mm.
And then I remembered when we were getting married and we were making our vows, you know, I said something that seems dumb now, but I said, you know, we'll be married forever. And he said, you know, you can love someone forever, but you can't be married forever.
Hmm.
You know, and I realized later he was trying to say, you're going to be married again,
yeah.
You know, or you need the possibility to be married again if that's what you want to do.
Yeah. Wow, he sounds like such an incredible guy.
Yeah, he was a good guy. I mean, he was a regular guy too, you know.
Radio Gorgeous.
So what was it like for you, you know, then coming out of that and you do emerge? I mean, because we're humans and we love life and, you know, we're survivors and sort of stepping out into like the dating world again, you know.
That was so strange.
Yeah.
I mean I think for me I felt like, you know, after what I had been through with Stephen and the fact that he was no longer living made me really appreciate being here and being alive and wanting to really do that to the fullest, you know, live to the fullest, whatever that was going to mean. And for a while, I really couldn't do that because I was grieving and, you know, but then it was very strange. I mean, that was also countered with, you know, waking up and realizing that I was single, and I hadn't been single since I was 17.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just that, you know, I was alone. It was like, I didn't even know how to do dating. In the beginning, I remember I had friends sort of make these subtle suggestions to me, like, oh, this guy's in town. Maybe you want to meet him for coffee. And I remember not even understanding the suggestion. Why would I want to meet someone I've never met before for coffee? And they'd say, oh, never mind.
Yeah. Why would I want to have coffee with this person?
I really didn't understand. And then, so I just wasn't ready.
Because you strike me as a very honest person. Did you come with a lot of intensity because of this? And a lot of, you know, because he...
Oh, sure.
And a lot of you are really high expectations, I would imagine, of a relationship.
I think so. I mean, also, you know, just having been in a long relationship and then moving into a dating scenario in which most people have not been in that situation.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if I wanted to be with someone, but at the same time, I was lonely too.
Yeah.
You know, I missed, I had really loved sharing my life with somebody. Mm. I mean, that surprised me. I didn't know how much I was going to love that.
Yeah.
But I did love it, and I would feel sort of, when good things would happen, I would think, oh, if only I, you know, was sharing this with somebody.
Yeah, yeah. And so who did you finally meet?
I met my husband now, Cullen, and I met him really much sooner than I would have thought I'd meet someone. I met him about a year after Stephen died.
Wow.
But I, when we met, I, you know, I had two thoughts, which is, the first thought I had is, oh, this is way too soon, there's no way. And then it was actually my younger brother was living with me at the time. It was very sweet. He was sort of here taking care of me, even though he was super young himself. He was like 23 or something.
Wow.
And I said, oh, you know, this guy is super cute and I really like him. And I said, it's too bad I'm not ready. And I said, maybe in a year. And my brother said, you know, he's not just going to be sitting there for a year. So, you know, which is a good point.
Yes, yes.
And then it made me realize I should, you know, and then I sort of had the feeling of, okay, well, when I was with Stephen, I did learn that, like, good things don't just come all the time, you know, and that this was kind of a rare chance, and so I thought I should take it. But I think it was really a lot to ask of Colin, just because I was, you know, falling in love with him, and I was still grieving, yeah. So I was kind of a mess.
Yes.
I'm sure I was difficult in a way, but I think I also appreciated him in a way that most people don't appreciate people.
Yeah.
You know, I felt so lucky to meet somebody.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing your story with us, Elizabeth. You've been
Thank you so much for finding me.
Tracking you down.
And thank you so much, Elizabeth Scarborough. And thank you so much, Donna, for coming on the show. And thank you, Ella, for editing. And do go to radiogorgeous.com and listen to Death Week. Produced and presented by Donna and Josephine. Radio Gorgeous 2015.